Welcome to Lubetkin's Other Blog Podcast. This is episode 16 for February 8th, 2006. I'm Steve Lubetkin, host of these podcasts. I'm managing partner of Lubetkin Communications. We're a strategic public relations counseling firm in Cherry Hill, New Jersey. We've been counseling clients on their communication strategies since December 2004, after spending 25 years doing public relations on the corporate side of the desk. In these podcasts, we try to bring you relevant content about public relations, communications, and journalism. Sometimes that means we interview people in these fields, and sometimes we bring you content from seminars, speeches, and other programs. We have a short program today highlighting some important comments about new media, like blogs and podcasts, from a Meet the Media panel discussion that was held February 7th in Philadelphia. And before we get into that, I do want to extend an invitation to listeners to participate in a listener survey. We're going to be testing podcast audience measurement, and those of you who listen to podcasts on a regular basis know that one of the big challenges those of us producing podcasts are facing is demonstrating to people who might be interested in commercializing podcasts who's listening. Who's out there? So we're going to be testing a new system of measurement from podtrack.com. As part of that experiment, we're hoping to learn more about our listeners. So what we're doing is asking listeners like yourself to take part in a listener survey for this podcast and for the other podcasts that we produce. So how do you do that? One way to do it is to go to the blog that is associated with this podcast, where you'll find a click-through button in the sidebar. The podcast blog is lubetkinsotherblog.blogspot.com. You can also visit www.lubetkin.net. And in the right-hand corner of our homepage, you'll find an icon for the PodTrack survey. Underneath the icon, and we deliberately did this as not a hyperlinked icon, we did it with text hyperlinks underneath because we do produce three different and discrete podcasts that serve different audiences, and you'll find links for all three of those podcasts underneath the icon. You're certainly welcome to fill out the survey for any of the three, but certainly fill one out for this podcast. And of course, if you have comments or suggestions about our podcasts, we'd love to hear from you. So please email me at steve@lubetkin.net. We'd be pleased also to receive audio comments, so certainly feel free to send an MP3 file as an attachment when you send comments. Now let's talk about today's program. Yesterday in Philadelphia, yesterday being February 7th, the Center City Proprietors Association, which is a trade association composed of merchants who have stores and businesses in the downtown business district of Philadelphia, which local people refer to as Center City, joined together with the Philadelphia Public Relations Association and sponsored a Meet the Media panel for the commercial real estate sector. And of course, as you might expect, there were a lot of real estate developers at the breakfast meeting. It took place at PNC Bank's Center City headquarters. And of course, there were also a lot of PR folks who wanted to hear from three key Philadelphia business journalists, people who have been around for quite a long time. The panelists were Henry Holcomb of the Philadelphia Inquirer, Natalie Castelny from the Philadelphia Business Journal, and Ernie Jones. Ernie is Ms. Ernie Jones, who writes a commercial real estate column for the Philadelphia Daily News. These three journalists have been around the Philadelphia business environment for quite a long time. And of course, most of what they told the audience, those of you in public relations have heard probably a million times, stuff about how to pitch the reporters' stories, what they write about, how to contact them, things like that, which I decided were probably not worth reiterating in a podcast of this nature. But they did have some interesting things to say about how print journalism is coping with the trends and the onslaught of bloggers and podcasters and other kinds of real-time media. So I thought you might like to hear some excerpts from those comments. The first excerpt is during the question and answer period when one of the audience members asked a question about how the journalists react to the increase in the number of blogs and how do they use blogs in their daily work. And I should also mention that you're hearing the voices of the panelists in the following order. It's Natalie Castelny from the Business Journal first, followed by Ernie Young from the Philadelphia Daily News, and then, of course, it's Henry Holcomb from the Inquirer.
Hi, I'm Denise Beavers from the Center City District, and I have a question for you about blogs. It seems to me that there's an increasing number of blogs that are specifically focused on real estate development, economic development in the city, and I'm curious to know if you look at them, if you're finding them at all credible, and what your thoughts are about their ascendance for folks who are interested in getting their news out. Oh, and their credibility. Very important.
I'm sure they're credible. I don't take them for their word. And I don't use them as a source for material. I only use material that I've had or research I've done. And, you know, they do pay, listen, anything where ideas are exchanged promotes democracy and it promotes any exchange of ideas is healthy, and I think they play a role. But I look at it at the Philly's blog once a week. I've got work to do. And reading a blog is not something I can pay to do.
I've got tips from blogs. They tipped me the stuff that was happening in certain areas where I might not get to. You don't get the, we're information overload. You don't always get to certain, this is a big city, geographically. I noted this the other night when I found myself up in West Oak Lane, extreme, and it was like part of the city I'd not been into before. And, you can live here for all these years and, suddenly stumble on these pockets. So the blog sometimes can tip you to concerns or neighborhood issues that you might otherwise miss. I don't use them as sources per se or rely on their thing, but I can go, that's interesting. I think I'll go look and see about that. Or sometimes they've actually tipped me to development projects that I didn't know about. There's been talk of it, everybody, the papers all have blogs. And one of the things that the Daily News wants me to do is to do a real estate blog. And I said, sure, pay me. They seem to think that we all like to sit around and just write the stuff off the top of our heads. And it doesn't take any time at all. But to come up with a really good blog would take a lot of work. You would have to generate items that would spur comment and debate. I think there's an awful lot of interest in this town. The blogs that you see indicate that there are people who spend an inordinate amount of time on these issues and who are really interested in it. And I think it bodes well for the three of us if our editors looked at this stuff more, they'd know that there's a real interest out there and that this is important to people. I used to argue with Zach Stolberg all the time. Real estate is just as important as the rest of the stuff at the front of the book, because you know what? Everybody lives in one. And everybody, or works in one, and basically, in terms of we think of real estate a lot in terms of home ownership, but people either want to buy one, are in the process of buying one, or they're selling one. I mean, even the homeless, are longing for one. I mean, so, real estate, and it's a finite resource, they aren't making any more of it. So it's very valuable. And everyone right now, it's the cocktail conversation of the hour. You all know it. I mean, this deal, that deal, the equity, the neighbor down the block who sold, or, the concern over what the new project is going to do to my daylight space. It is very important. And all of that discussion goes on in the blog. So I do. I don't spend hours on it, but a couple of days a week I'll cruise through some of them, to see what the topic is that everybody has their knickers in a twist. And then No.
Do you have a favorite blog?
Do I have a favorite blog?
Yeah.
For national stuff, I like inlandnews.com, and for local stuff, I like Philly Blog because it's so neighborhood oriented, and I can just cruise among the neighborhoods. But on a national end, I like the Inland Blog. I think it's, in fact, if I wrote a blog, I'd want to write the Inland Blog. I think it's really
good.
Thank you. Yes,
Henry? I think all of us who devote our lives to communications, arts, and sciences need to be more aggressive about shaping the new media. Because it's treating people like your clients horribly unfairly. I mean, my wife got a new job that was required that we move to Bucks County to be near it. And so I went online to start kind of looking for apartments, looking for this, that, or the other. And anybody can say anything about anybody on the web. And so you look up an apartment complex, and here's this bulletin board that says, this is the Nazi runs this place. It's like, yeah, all sorts of squirrel stuff. And then the next item is, I've lived here all my life. You know, the manager called her friend and said, write this to balance that. I've lived here all my life. It's the greatest landlord in the world. Well, a person who's busy is likely to say, well, there's a controversy there. I'm just going to steer clear of that. All my life, I have checked things out. You know, years ago, when I was a young reporter in Texas, I got a letter from my former pastor saying that, I'm disappointed in you for not writing this story about the lieutenant governor having sex with the elevator operators in the state house. And I wrote back to the pastor and said, are you sure? He said, I have it from an unimpeachable source. Well, the problem was that they hadn't had automatic elevators for 10 years. There hadn't been any elevator operators. And the Capitol's not tall enough for you to get business done between floors. Reporters get stuff like this all the time. I mean, I get things about all of your clients all the time. And you have to be fair and check it out. I mean, I'm held accountable. If I write a story that I can't back up, you have recourse. You can come collect damages from my employer. And so I'm hired because they have a reputation for being fair. They checked me out thoroughly before. They tracked me for 10 years before they hired. There's at least two pairs of eyes look at every story I write before it goes in the paper. If they think that I'm not clear or fair, I get it kicked back to me to think about it some more. But how do we, I mean, as far as, yeah, I'm in favor of expression of ideas, but as one of the pioneers of the new media said, you know, the best chat room in the world is places like this, where you can meet people and shake hands and get to know each other. But anyway, I am sounding like a contrarian, but I think there's a serious issue here that you and I need to work on how we're going to shape this, how we're going to maintain some of the safeguards. Because a free society can't survive if anybody can slander anybody and get by with it, or anybody can start a rumor and destroy somebody's business or career.
During the course of the program, each of the panelists talked about their publication and the role that it plays and how technology is transforming that. First, we'll hear from Ernie Young from the Philadelphia Daily News.
I tell people that technology has not only changed how we do what we do, it has changed what we do. The news that we cover, because whatever the newspaper, a 9/11 is a case in point. I walked into the newsroom that morning and I saw everybody gathered around the four TVs at the center of the room. And there was one monitor that was mounted up in the above my head as I was walking. I happened to look up and I see the World Trade Center with a jet sticking out of it. And I'm going, what movie is that? A few seconds later, I understood what it meant, and I stood there and I heard my editor say, we've already got two photographers and a couple of reporters on their way to New York. And I'm looking at this on the TV set as the second tower collapses, and I realized that there's nothing we could write the next day that would not have been regurgitated by TV radio in the internet ad nauseum. By the time we came out the next morning, it would all be old news. That was when I really, at that particular point, saw myself as, quote-unquote, a dinosaur.
Natalie talked about the differences between the Philadelphia Business Journal and the other two publications on the panel.
The Philadelphia Business Journal covers business. We don't have to have the horoscopes, we don't have the crime, politics, etc., unless it intersects with business. So in real estate and economic development and beats in covering the business community are important and always will be. And it is actually, we're part of a chain of 41 other papers and that's focused on local business. And covering real estate, commercial, and residential is a big part of the coverage that each of the papers offer. And we are exploring different ways of getting that news out to you through the web. We're looking at podcasting news to you sometimes. Always exploring it, and it's something that we can only grow. Trust me, I have news that I can't get into the paper only because there's no room.
And Natalie also talked about some ways that the Philadelphia Business Journal is trying to use the new technology to deliver news to their subscribers and their readers.
I'll let you know that the Business Journal has made a real commitment to its web operations. We've been putting news on our website since, probably 98, if not a little before. So that's early in the trend of multimedia. We've committed a lot of resources to it and use it as a complement to our print edition. We have a web editor and we do have close to now, I think, nearly 10,000 subscribers to our web news. And we have two daily blasts with the news. I think one's at 1 and the other one is at 3 o'clock. So when you're thinking about news, think about the web operations. Think about, if you want to be able to get in the first round of news blast at 1 o'clock, and then the end of the day news blast at 3 o'clock. And we keep the stories online for a week. So we start back up on Monday.
And finally, Henry Holcomb had some interesting comments about the difference between the responsibilities that he has as a print journalist and the lack of responsibility, as he sees it, on the part of many of the people writing in the blogosphere. And his comments are kind of interesting as well.
I worry a little bit about the impact of the new media because I haven't figured out how they're going to afford me. And I've gotten 3 very interesting stories working with you. Your public relations person told me about the first one, and I came to New Hope, and we had lunch, and we talked about it. I'm not sure the new media could afford for me to come get acquainted with you. And the story that I got by having lunch with you that day, I could not have gotten on the telephone. I wouldn't, if I hadn't actually been out and about in this area enough to know New Hope, I wouldn't have been interested in even what your public relations person said. Because I would have just, it would have just been another place on the map to me. So I do worry a little bit about that. Now the good news is, I'm not so sure that the print media is going to die as quickly as some skeptics say it is. In my spare time, I'm president of the largest union at the Inquirer and Daily News, and so with the parent company of the Inquirer on the market right now, I've spent the last 3 months trying to find a reasonable person to buy the paper. And we're working hard with a whole range of something I never really thought a union president would get involved in, but I'm talking to people that have really studied it and see that the declines of newspapers have been exaggerated by 2 things. One, a lot of the circulation declines was intentional. In the old days, papers were owned by people like Walter Annenberg and here and my former publisher, Amy Carter in Fort Worth, Texas, who at Earl B. Shaw Hobby in Houston, who were civic-minded and used the newspaper just purely to promote their political and civic agendas. So the Fort Worth Star-Telegram sold papers in Clovis, New Mexico. It's covered West Texas. The Houston Post, when I was there, we covered the southeastern border of the whole state of Texas, like it was our home market. Well, as Fortune 500 companies have become owners of our newspapers, they listen to the advertiser, and the advertiser said, I'm not interested in that circulation way out there. So we had systematically cut it back. That was intentional. Now that in recent years, where publicly traded companies are focusing more and more on the bottom line, we have not done some things that are fundamental to the business to maintain a portion of our circulation. But, you know, I'm talking to people who are relatively convinced that if we were held by a private company that could think in 5-year cycles instead of 3 and 4 month cycles, that we could be a solid, viable, fairly well-staffed enterprise for a very long time. If not, I mean, the technology may evolve into a whole where my work will not just go in the paper, but it will go on to all sorts of new devices. I mean, I'm an early adapter to new technology. I've got about 3,000 sources in this BlackBerry that I used to have. If I had a Rolodex, I'd have a cart to carry it around. But, yeah, I mean, I get headlines on my BlackBerry that I read when I get to an interview early. So because in this market, you have to either get early or risk being late because of the traffic. But yeah, I think we need to think about how we're going to pay for it. I mean, if you were to get the Hay studies and look at what I do for a living, they'd say I'm underpaid because any objective material judgment about what a journalist does, we have a great deal of impact on the quality of the product. We have to work on our own. We have to make decisions. We have to develop relationships. We have to carry an enormous amount of knowledge in our heads so that we can make judgments that I can do this today or I can wait till tomorrow. And I'm not sure how the new media is going to pay for that.
And that brings us to the end of another Lou Betkin's Other Blog podcast. And we thank you for listening today. We hope you've enjoyed the content of this program. And again, if you are a regular listener or becoming a regular listener to our podcasts, we would appreciate your participating in our listener survey. You can visit the listener survey at our blog for the podcast. It's Lou Betkin's Other Blog, all one word, .blogspot.com. And you'll see an icon in the right-hand column in the profile bar at the right-hand side of the podcast blog postings. We also have the hyperlink for the survey on our homepage at www.lubetkin.net. And there are text hyperlinks for surveys for each of our podcast programs. Feel free to complete the surveys. And also, we'd love to hear from you with comments or suggestions. You can email them to steve@lubetkin.net. And we'll take audio comments as MP3 files also. And again, we appreciate your listening. For everyone here at Lubetkin's Other Blog podcast, this is Steve Lubetkin. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you out there on the net. Take good care.